The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off.
You're listening to the Average Conservationist podcast, brought to you in partner with 2% for Conservation. 2% for Conservation's mission is to create an alliance of businesses and individuals that ensure the future of hunting and angling by committing their time and dollars to fish and wildlife. 1% of your time plus 1% of your money equals 2% for Conservation. 2% helps businesses and people pair with conservation causes to support things that fit what they care about. Whether you are into hunting, fishing, or just getting outdoors, 2% can help you not only start giving back to wildlife, but get certified for it. Getting 2% certified means you've made the same commitment as popular brands like Sitka, Stone Glacier, and Seek Outside in giving at least 1% of your time and dollars back to wildlife. But it's not just for outdoor companies. Breweries, contractors, coffee roasters, and even piano repair companies have earned 2% certification and stand out as leaders in their communities for doing so. Businesses that are committed to conservation deserve your business when you shop. Learn more about 2% for Conservation at fishandwildlife.org. That's fishandwildlife.org. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Average Conservationist podcast, and I'm your host, Marcus Ewing. All right, today I'm going to fly solo with you, as I've been doing, I guess, a bit more frequently in the past 6-7 months. But there was a topic that I realize I'm a bit late to the game on. I wanted to do an episode on this last week. I just didn't get a chance to. Essentially, is what it comes down to, and. So again, a few weeks late to the game or discussing this on the podcast, but the ruling came down, I guess it's probably 2 weeks ago now, on the corner crossing case. Jeez, oh, Pete's. I'm going to stumble over that one a few times this episode. The ruling came down on this trial, on this case, and essentially was the verdict was in favor of the hunters. And for those listening who have not heard about the Corner Crossings case in Wyoming, quick rundown, quick synopsis. Essentially, there was a couple different suits or lawsuits filed, but four hunters from Missouri accessed a piece of public land that was essentially, landlocked isn't the right word by private land, but it was almost in, or not almost, but it was in a checkerboard shaped fashion, the way that the parcels were laid out. So two corners of private touched. There was two corners that were private land, two corners that were public land. These hunters wanted to access one of the piece of public, I guess, that was inside of the two pieces of private. And in order to do so, what they did was they brought a ladder to this crossing, put the ladder over the fence or whatever type of barricade there was, climbed over the ladder, hopped into the public land, and essentially the case was made that they trespassed, were trespassing on the private land because they were in the airspace. So there was first, and I'm going to probably have to refer back to some notes from time to time here, but there was first a, not a civil, but a criminal charge that the landowner brought against them, which the ruling was in favor of the hunters. And then it went to a civil lawsuit. And again, the verdict was in favor of the hunters from Missouri. And this was, there was a few previous court cases, some precedent that was set that really helped the four hunters with their defense, with their side of the case. Gosh, I feel like I'm gonna have to use a lot of legal jargon, and I'm out of my depths when it comes to that type of stuff. However, when you look at it, and before I even knew a lot about this case, or I guess kind of the inner workings of it, I was familiar with it kind of from afar. I was, you know, like a lot of you who are familiar with it, I was seeing blog posts, you know, maybe reading some headlines from articles. I would maybe hear people talking about it through clips and reels and these types of things on social media. So I didn't know the fine details. And I remember thinking back about, you know, how these gentlemen accessed this land. And I started thinking, I was like, well, if there was a fence there and they climbed the fence, then I could see why the landowner would have an issue, right? And when I read it, and I read that they, and I, or let me back up. And I thought to myself, well, what if you just used a ladder, right? You just, you know, you brought like a 6-8 foot ladder, folding ladder, whatever the case is, and you just pop this thing, you know, one side of the fence, or one side of the public to the other side of the public, just access it that way. You know, I thought to myself that, well, then you're not actually touching anything. You're just, you're in the airspace. And that it turns out that that is exactly what these hunters did. Now, whether they had scouted this land previously, and all of this information may be out there somewhere, I just haven't taken a deep enough dive into it to kind of hear their entire story, the hunters, that is. And so it turns out that's what they did. And the only thing that they technically were trespassing on was the airspace, going back to that. And that the two different judges ruled was, you know, not a crime. And, you know, I start to think about other instances in just your day-to-day interactions with neighbors, out in public, whatever the case is, and how often we quote-unquote trespass by just being in the airspace, right? Like, I think about my backyard, and I have a fence that separates my yard from my neighbor's yard, and great neighbor. But if I were to walk over there and wave my arm over the top of his fence, by the thought process behind these landowners who were trying to file suit against these hunters is that I was trespassing. Even though I never actually stepped foot on the ground, I never actually touched any of his physical property, I would still be trespassing. And I just think how foolish that is to have that mindset, that because something or someone passed through your airspace, that they are trespassing on your land. And I think, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm speaking out of turn too much here, because again, the facts I have are relatively limited based on a couple of recent articles that I just read today. So I was trying to keep it as top of mind as possible. And that's the landowner who pressed charges. I mean, that's essentially, he did not want anyone on that piece of public land because of, you know, likely the deer, the elk, just the wild game in general that inhabit this area of public land. And he was essentially not allowing, you know, people like these four hunters an opportunity to access public land. And I realize that this is, it's related to conservation because it's related to public land and access. And BHA had certainly played a large part in helping the defense of these four hunters, you know, raising money. There was an attorney who took this case on pro bono, I do believe. I believe he was a hunter as well. So this was something that was likely kind of near and dear to him as an outdoorsman. And I just can't understand wanting or being so selfish that you would try to restrict other hunters from accessing public land. I don't know. I guess it's a hard thing for me to wrap my head around, because, you know, when you think about public land, I mean, it's everybody's, you know, like the very popular shirt, you know, the public landowner, that BHA has made so popular over the years. And I mean, I own one as well. And it's funny, sometimes I'll be wearing that shirt and people will read it and they kind of chuckle at it, you know, because it's just an interesting way to look at it, because it is, and it's one of those things that maybe we take for granted, as outdoorsmen, as outdoors women, you know, that public land is always going to be there. It's always going to be accessible. We have certainly found out over the course of time that public lands and access, you know, a lot of those things are under attack, whether it's development, you know, the list kind of goes on and on there, on the restrictions that people are trying to put on our access and our rights to recreate on these public lands. And I think it, you know, the rulings obviously were a huge victory, especially as it pertains to the state of Wyoming. But it makes you wonder that why, you know, a landowner, well, I mean, it doesn't make you wonder, you know why, because he didn't want presumably anyone else to hunt on this land that he had what he thought was kind of unfettered access to, even though it was public. In his thought, or his thought process, excuse me, was that since there was two pieces of private bordering that no one had the ability to access that except for himself. And it's just so selfish, and you're limiting people's ability and opportunity to go out and, you know, see and enjoy and do what people love to do in terms of hunting, or, you know, heck, even if someone just wanted to backpack in there and camp or something like that, like they wouldn't even be able to do that. Or I guess I wonder if, you know, the four people that were not even charged, but that the lawsuit was brought against for trespassing. What if they were hikers, right? What if they just wanted to explore a new piece of land? Would the landowner have had an issue then? Or is it just because they were hunters and he likely knows the class of animals that live in that area, in that range? That's why he had an issue with it, because now someone else was going to have access to something that he felt that even though it's public land, that he was the only one that had right to access that. And that is a very dangerous thought process. It's a very narrow-minded and, again, selfish thought process. And going back to the victory part of it for, I guess you'd say, yeah, the defendants. What this does is it doesn't necessarily change laws across the country. I think that's one thing that we as hunters, especially in states outside of Wyoming, need to be aware of, is that it does not change laws in current states. However, there is some precedence out there now for potential future cases. I'm looking through an article here to try to read something. Sorry. So there, okay. What happens when the legislature comes and changes that statute next session to say corner crossing is illegal? This case is not binding upon a judge in a criminal case. It's persuasive authority, but not a binding authority. Okay, more kind of lawyer speak as I'm trying to quickly scan back over this article that I read. And this article was actually on Mediator, so it's a pretty easily accessible article. But I'm sure that, well, I'm going to ballpark here, but 95%, if not higher, percent of people that listen to this podcast do not have large swaths of land in the West that is potentially restricting access to public land. But I'd be curious to hear from some of you listeners out there. Are we all in agreement on this, that this is, the ruling was obviously a ruling that as hunters and outdoor recreationists that we were hoping for. But if for some reason you are on the, if you're on the other side of the fence, no pun intended here, what are your thoughts or why do you look at that, or why would you be on the side of the landowner in this particular case? And I don't want to necessarily pass judgment on someone who maybe feels that it wasn't the right ruling. But I'm just curious, I don't want to get into the game of that seems to be so popular now, is if you disagree with someone, you point fingers and name call and those types of things. But I would be curious, I know I did say that earlier on that viewpoint was selfish that's my opinion. That's how I feel. But what say you on defending the landowner's point of view in this particular case? I would just be curious. You could shoot me a message. You can reach out to me on social media or, through the Average Conservationist website. I'd be more than happy just to kind of hear people's thoughts and hear why maybe they felt differently. But I think that as time goes on, I think we're likely going to see more and more of these types of cases. And one thing that I had quickly read talked about the fact that the layout, as I referred to earlier, the kind of checkerboard pattern that these parcels of land were in played a factor in that as well, because I think if, you know, if a piece of public land is, you know, landlocked in a in the true sense where there is private land surrounding it, then yeah, to be able to physically cross over someone's private land to access that, yes, would indeed be trespassing. And I don't like that there's, you know, public land that is landlocked out there that is not accessible. Previous guest on the podcast, Jason Matzinger, talked about or made a film about hunting on a piece of land that was only accessible essentially by helicopter. And he made a film about going on a hunt like that, and really great film. And it's interesting to me that there can be public land that is, you know, in essence, landlocked and not able to be recreated on and not able to be enjoyed by, you know, the likes of backpackers and, you know, fishermen and hunters and things like that. So I'm curious to see that, or curious to see what the future holds in terms of, you know, Montana, Colorado, Idaho, you know, Washington, these other states that have, you know, a lot of public land, but also a lot of private land as well. If we're going to see more and more cases like this, how the ruling in Wyoming will affect potential rulings down the road in those states. And if we will see, I guess, kind of sweeping changes across the country, because obviously there's certain states that have a much smaller percentage of public land, and, you know, how easily accessible is that, and what could likely come of that in the future. So that was just kind of a quick synopsis of the case, a little bit about the ruling, a little bit of my thought on the topic. It felt like it was something important to at least address. There was also, you know, stepping away from the Corner Crossings case and talking about some recent legislation that was changed or that was overruled by the Supreme Court. And again, this is another one that I think I would likely try to bring on a guest to talk about, where it a lot of protections on wetlands was decreased based on this ruling. I don't know if trying to get someone from an organization like Trout Unlimited or something like that, who probably has a much better grasp and handle on that, but I'm going to save that for another episode where someone can speak a bit more eloquently, I guess, about it, and has a lot more knowledge and information, because I would not be doing that, I would be doing that a great disservice to try to talk about that. And that is obviously a ruling that came from a much higher court, a much bigger impact and ramifications across the kind of entirety of the landscape. So that's one that I think we will save for another episode, and see how that continues to play out in the coming weeks and months, and go from there. So that is all I have for you guys this week. Hope it wasn't too bad for you. Hopefully, possibly you learned a little bit, or, you know, just wanted to hear my two cents on it. But yeah, that's it. I would like to thank 2% for Conservation. And if you're interested in learning more about 2% for Conservation, you can visit their website, fishandwildlife.org. And over there, you're going to see all the certified brands that have committed to conservation that you should support when you shop I also encourage you guys to give 2% a follow on social media, where they're going to post only positive conservation-driven content that lands in your feed. So it's going to brighten up your day. So again, if you'd like to learn more about 2% for Conservation, you can look for them online on social media or at fishandwildlife.org. Thanks for joining me this week, everyone. Stay tuned next week. We will be back to regularly scheduled guests, so you don't have to listen to me talk for half an hour. But yeah, enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. And remember that conservation starts with you.